Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries. Movement disorders, that's a very complicated topic with really a lot of information out there, and there are people who subspecialize in this area, this topic, which is definitely not me. But I'm going to share some general rules with everyone. Problem number one I see is that movement disorders, functional movement disorders, or functional disorders in general, are overdiagnosed. So the risk is highest in someone who is starting to learn the patterns of movement disorders. And until they get a good handle on it, a lot of things look inconsistent. So I see this problem in movement disorder fellowship. When the first year fellows start, within a few months, they start diagnosing a lot of functional movement disorders, or bringing that as a differential or a top of the differential. And my rule is that the first year movement disorder fellow cannot diagnose a psychogenic movement disorder or functional movement disorder, and cannot even keep it in differential. So they're just not allowed to think that way. One of the problem is that as soon as you think of functional movement disorder, your mind shuts off. And although you, let's say you're right 9 out of 10 times, that 1 out of 10 time that you were wrong, you were really wrong. And it's just not acceptable by a movement disorder specialist to have a 10% failure rate. So the MDS fellows are not allowed to have this diagnosis in their first year. And in their second year, they are already trained to a point that they hesitate bringing up this as a differential diagnosis. The second important thing about this diagnosis is that we consider it a positive diagnosis, not a diagnosis of exclusion. So you cannot say that because this does not match any known patterns that I know of, it has to be a movement, functional movement disorder, or psychogenic movement disorder. You have to prove by evidence why this may be a psychogenic movement disorder. What are those evidence? There's a whole long list of 17 different elements that have been written down by Mark Hellett, which is one of the world authorities on functional movement disorders. And Mark Hellett at NIH, he has written a book on psychogenic movement disorders, one of the best books on this topic. And he talked about various things in history and examination. So to just give you some example, I typically don't remember that list off the top of my head, but things like presence of symptoms that are of various different systems involvement, present of symptoms that shift or change, present of symptoms that come and go, so they're transiently resolved and then come back. And similar in examination, you have problems, things like things that are incongruent, things are that are out of sync. In a tremor, the two sides are out asynchronous while they should be synchronous, if you know, in a tremor, because they have a common tremor generator, waxing and waning, distractibility, variability, and so on and so forth. So there's a long list of criteria that we use or are trained on. And it's not just that presence of one or two of them is make us think of psychogenic movement disorder. We have to show many of these. So I have just seen a case with a movement disorder, our second movement disorder fellow, Dr. Syed, where he saw a case in his continuity clinic and presented to me. And typically when I go, he's second year fellow, you know, well-trained. And typically when I go to his clinic, I just say hi to the patients and just agree with whatever Dr. Syed, Nabil Syed, has said, who was, by the way, the first participant in our first batch in this course, and FCPS neurologist from Shifa. Many of you might know him well. So, but this time when I went in there, there was something unusual about this patient. But I went through this long examination and discussion with the patient to show multiple different evidences for me to think that this is movement disorder, this is psychogenic movement disorder or psychogenic tremor, because it had features that look very real, enough to fool the second year fellow. And although Nabil had some suspicion here and there, most of what he saw made him think that this was a real tremor, a real movement disorder. Now, for me to convince myself, I used the standard that I have to do an examination obvious enough for the fellow with me, that without me saying it, that he at the end of the exam turns to me and say, that, Dr. Bari, I think that this is a functional movement disorder. And that's what happens, that I said nothing to the patient and nothing to Nabil at the end of the examination. And after a very long examination that I typically don't do on his continuity clinics patient, but when we came back and we were in the documentation room, in the physician room, he said that, so, you know, were you thinking that's a psychogenic movement disorder? I said, yeah, you know, and we discussed that, and he agreed that more than 70-80% of the examination was consistent with psychogenicity, although there were bits and pieces here and there, probably even less than that, less than 10%, which looked real. So the point being that even to this day and age, it's not that I see a patient walk in and say, oh, this is psychogenic movement disorder. Even if I have a suspicion on the very first moment that I see a patient, I disregard it and I do the due diligence and go through a full detailed evaluation and assessment and convince myself with multiple different testing and assessment to say, yes, this is a psychogenic movement disorder. And sometime I don't make a decision on the first visit if I'm not clear. I treat, give it a benefit of doubt, keep the differential in my mind as a second or third choice, start some treatment, and then follow up with the patient and do repeated examination on follow-up visits to make things become more clear. And, you know, that's one of the phenomena we often see, that repeat examinations on different days as patients come back show you things that you didn't see the first time and may make you change your mind. I have changed mine either ways. There was a patient I kept psychogenic movement disorder on the top, psychogenic Parkinsonism, but on the repeat examination, on the repeat visit, 3 months or 6 months later, it was so obviously true Parkinson's disease that I was amazed that why did I even think of psychogenic movement disorder on the first time. And I've been wrong. I have very much convincingly thought someone psychogenic dystonia when it turned out to be DYT1 or Oppenheimer dystonia in a late atypical presentation. And again, another patient where I thought it was a possibly psychogenic dystonia, although I was less convinced, but it turned out to be on MRI brain imaging, Hallermann-Streiff disease or NBIA type 1, pentothyroid kinase deficiency, later on genetically proven based on a genetic testing done for a research trial because patient was not affording, didn't have insurance. But anyways, so long story short, psychogenic movement disorders should not be considered if you are not comfortable with your expertise. Psychogenic movement disorder should be proven with repeated positive evidence and not just because it's something that you have not seen before. You have to see the evidence that is very consistent with the psychogenic movement disorder, such as the variability, distractibility, asynchronicity, waxing and waning, blah, 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 long list. And then finally, to the point that Imjad is raising, that there are true brain changes in functional movement disorders. Functional movement disorders is usually thought of as two different phenomena. One is what we call the psychogenic movement disorder, where there is an unconscious pressure on the brain leading to dysfunction of a brain system, leading to the symptoms. So patient is truly unaware of the inherent psychogenicity of these symptoms and inner tensions. And the other is what we call fictitious disorder, where the patient is actually faking for a secondary gain, whatever that may be, or a sick role adoption or financial gain. Now, we in clinical practice in the US almost never diagnose fictitious movement disorders. Almost never, or I would say 100% never. I've never given this diagnosis to anyone. We consider that the fictitious movement disorder or fictitious disorder is a diagnosis, a legal diagnosis, where you have to prove secondary gain, where you have to get evidence to the contrary. You have to, for example, record patient in different hidden cameras to show that the patient, that dystonia goes away when the patient is sitting by themselves. And there are some stories in the past of physicians actually doing it, although there have been debate on the legality of something like that. You cannot record a patient without their consent or formal knowledge. So even if you're going to use a hidden camera, you must tell the patient walking to the room that there is a camera in this room that does record patient video sometimes. Even though if you're not going to say that I'm recording you right now, you have to disclose that this patient, this camera gets recorded often and may be recorded at any point. So, you know, it's not truly a hidden camera anymore. But That's the current legal understanding, that you cannot do those kind of tricks or placebo trials with the patient. But the bottom line is that fictitious movement disorder is really where you prove that there was a gain and patient was faking it. And we in medical systems do not do it. You know, we are healthcare providers. So the only functional movement disorder that we diagnose is the psychogenic movement disorder, where the patient is not aware of what's going on is not due to a damage or injury, but a dysfunction due to anxiety, depression, pressures, you know, whatever, or conversion or whatever. And with that background, with that understanding, what I tell my residents and fellows is that psychogenic movement disorder is same burden as the real disease. So if someone has a tremor and their life is impaired by the tremor, it does not matter whether the tremor is psychogenic or non-psychogenic. The impairment of their life or disability or effect on their daily living is the same. And in some studies, the effect of the psychogenic tremor is worse than the real tremor, because psychogenic tremor is typically associated with an underlying depression, anxiety, less will to fight with it, less adaptability, less adoption to those limitations, while a true, while a non-psychogenic tremor or organic tremor, patient has a more will to fight, more ability to adapt to it, more willingness or desire to do it. And the last point is that what Amjad is saying is true, that there is a functional change that is appreciable on functional imaging in patients with psychogenic or functional movement disorders, where there is brain changes that are suggestive of a clear abnormality of function or physiology of the brain, that almost to a point that it could be diagnostic for some things like psychogenic tremor, which again support my idea that there is, you know, just because a tremor is happening not because of a structural lesion or a microscopic cellular change, but due to a dysfunction of circuits or network, doesn't mean that that tremor is less of a tremor than the other. So one tremor is not better or worse than the other. They're all equally tremor. It's just the mechanism of the tremor is different, which means the approach to treatment will be different, and so on and so forth. And so I have a very positive attitude with the patient. If I am suspecting psychogenic movement disorder, I will tell the patient that it's great news what you are having. I've seen it before. It's actually a transient disorder. It can be cured, has a high chance. So there's a 60-70% chance that it will go away. And typically in functional movement disorder, the symptoms start and build up over the first 2 years or so, then they plateau for a year or two, and then they gradually go away in a year or two. That gives hope to the patient, and a lot of these patients then follow that pathway that I've convinced them that that's going to happen. And it's because I am convinced that it's going to happen that they can read it in my voice, in my face, and it actually does happen. So, you know, in that sense, psychogenic movement disorders are actually great movement disorders, because you can actually cure them. And patient love it, and I love it. And I tell my patient, well, we'll fix it. This is a curable disorder. We'll get it fixed. We'll work together on it. And then, of course, I use symptomatic therapies because it is symptomatically disabling to the patient, regardless of the cause or etiology in the brain. To learn more about the mini fellowship, visit our website for University of Nebraska Medical Center, Department of Neurological Sciences, where you can be part of the community and ask us questions. You can write to me on mdclinicforyou@gmail.com. It's mdclinic4u@gmail.com. And follow me on YouTube for longer discussions by searching for Danish Bahati, DANISH space BHATTI. You can also find me on Twitter @DanishBahati_MD and on LinkedIn.